Hello, everyone. Welcome back to another podcast episode of Real Conversations About Aging Parents. I have a special guest with me today, Aaron. Hi, Aaron. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks for having me.
Excellent. So I was very excited when your team reached out, and I always love to have anybody from the design sector of the world come on the podcast because that is such a core component of aging well and aging safely and having high quality of life. And so anytime I get to talk to somebody with a background like yours, I get very, very interested. So before we dive into that, can you tell us just a little bit about yourself, where you're from, kind of your life situation right now?
Yeah, absolutely. We are located, Forever Home's located outside of Seattle in Washington State. So great Pacific Northwest. I just turned 50. I've been an architect since 2003. And we're also living the dream of the sandwich generation. We have a blended family with four high schoolers. We have a 19, 18-year-old boy, a 16-year-old girl, and a 14-year-old boy. So also then we have four aging parents. So we definitely fit the mold, both professionally and personally.
Excellent. So that sounds like a really crazy house to have four teenagers. Like, what do you have to do to cope with that? I'm about to have one next week, and I don't know if I can do it. So,
Yeah. Thanks to partnership and the ability to occasionally tag out for mental sanity, I think is all a part of the puzzle, but they're good kids.
Absolutely. Well, tell me, so you started in architecture back in 2003. Were you always interested in aging in place design, or where did you kind of start out? What was your journey?
Yeah, good question. So I graduated University of Washington in architecture in 1996, got my architecture license in 03. But really what got me curious, there were two light bulbs that went off for me. One was personal and then professional, and I put them together. So when I left for UW, grandma was traveling the world, playing bridge, playing cards at a master's level and loving retirement. When I got back from UW 5 years later, she was not 5'9", she was 5'2", and trapped in a hospital bed in the living room and didn't know Carl's name. So for her, osteoporosis and Alzheimer's were her downfall. At 22, I wasn't ready to listen to anything about medical or hygiene or any of that elder stuff. But as an architecture student, I sure noticed that a split level home in Portland, Oregon was failing her. I saw that the house was broken. Fast forward 15 years, and I bought a car off Craigslist back when we used to do that.
Yeah.
And
you're still alive to talk about it.
And I'm still alive. I know. It was right before dinosaurs. Two 63-year-olds brought me a car, and I was like, oh, wow, whose is this? And it's mom. She finally gave up the keys at 92. Where does she live? Assisted living down the road. And I said, I'm doing a little research. Do you mind if I ask what that cost? And they said $150,000 out of pocket and $10,000 a month. Now, when I speak on stages, I say, raise your hand if you have a $10,000 mortgage. If you do, I'm adoptable. I would love to see your home, right? We don't. So I put those two things together, grandma's experience and what I saw as an architecture student, and then the cost of the alternative to be in the CCRC continuum of care.
Can you talk about that real quick, the CCRC?
Yeah, sorry. Assisted living, independent living, memory care, that whole sequence of after the house. And so I thought, gosh, if that's the cost of that outcome, shouldn't we be working a lot harder to solve housing for the 50-plus marketplace? Because spec builders don't do that.
So then where did that lead you to next? Professionally, were you working at a firm at the time, or how did that work?
Yeah, so this was right about the time that I was going out on my own after working for others. So ADM Architecture opened in February of 09. That's also the year that I got CAHPS certified through the National Association of Home Builders, NAHB. And so CAHPS is a certified aging in place specialist. And that's a 3-day coursework that you can take that allows you to hang that stamp on your website and use the alphabet soup behind your name. And off I went. And I've been doing that for 15 years as ADM Architecture, believing that I should talk to anybody who's 40 plus about the idea that they could still live in this home in 30 years. So we should talk about inclusive, accessible, and equitable design.
And so that's fascinating. And so when you went off on your own, you already knew you were going to subspecialize just in this area, or did that still kind of come later?
About the same time, I was trying to, as you think about opening your own business, you look at your competition and you try to figure out what's my unique sales position, right? And so one of the things that I chose to be deep and narrow in expertise in is aging in place. It sets us apart from other residential designers and local architects in our area.
And that was going to be my next question. If you're exclusively residential, or do you get pulled in on the commercial projects or
multi-unit projects? Yeah, good question. Now, our architecture firm does both. I mean, I've designed banks. We just turned in a 150-unit apartment building near Tacoma. So we do both multifamily, commercial, and residential. But the residential piece is the part that I decided to take national, and that's what Forever Home is as a separate company.
Okay. Can you tell me a little bit more about that?
Sure. So after 15 years of post getting my CAPS certificate, I came to recognize that learning what you learn in those 16 hours, if you take out breaks and lunches over 3 days, is not enough for me to trust you to come into my mom's house and design our future. Okay.
Fair enough. Right? I'll say fair enough. Yes.
Yeah. But 15 years later, growing a company from 2 people doing $100,000 gross to 12 people doing $1 million gross, I thought, gosh, if a third of our business is specifically around aging in place, well, that's a whole nother company. I should be teaching other people how to do what we do. So Forever Home is training professionals how to do what we've done, which has become synonymous with the term aging in place in a Tri-County area.
So I'm going to pick your brain on that.
Yeah.
Which is why you're here. So what are the two or three things that people, where do we go wrong in thinking about aging in place? Where do you see people sort of take that fork in the road where you're trying to correct them and bring them back into kind of the Forever Home or that way of thinking? Like, what do we get wrong? How do you see that this fails in the traditional application of having a designer and architect who maybe they're CAP certified, maybe they're not, but they say they're aging in place? Like, where's the differentiator there?
Yeah, it's a good question. And I'm going to zoom out just for a second. So bring me back to it. We're actually sort of breaking this from the beginning, right? Let's say your parents had 10 acres of forest. Well, their retirement plan is to sell that to a developer, and the sellable product is parcels, right? Lots. Well, what's the result? You try to get as many lots as you can on your 10 acres after roads and detention vaults and, right? Well, that means they are the smallest legally possible as sellable products, so you get the most of them. The problem is the buyer of those lots is a builder, and the builder's sellable product is heated square feet, but you gave him a postage stamp to work on. That's why most of our houses are 2 stories at the spec builder level. In a perfect world, I would disrupt that entire industry because of what we need for boomers, seniors, and adult children in the next 30 or 40 years. Now, to the designer's point, as an architect, and I've done 2 million square feet of commercial buildings, so I know what the dimensions are and where the grab bars go for the wheelchair restroom at the bank, right? But there isn't such a thing as ADA code for residential. Doesn't exist until you get into multifamily, and then you need some ambulatory units for being equitable. So it's in the single family home category that, knowing what I know about commercial and ADA and ANSI code books and HUD, right? There's multiple books that kind of merge together. And I can start with a book, but at the end, I'm really wanting a team. I would like an occupational therapist on the team. I would like a reverse mortgage specialist on your team, or your financial planner, or your CPA. The more brains we can bring to the table, the better solution we're going to have for your outcome and your goals.
And so I'm glad you said that, because I was going to be one of my next questions, which is reconceptualizing the home to serve for the duration of a lifetime, and the professionals that are involved, or of course right now not involved, in the conception of that home. And so having healthcare providers, that's part where I get very interested in this topic of aging in place. I'm not an occupational therapist, but I'm a physician that works in that same area. Right. And that we're not necessarily in that whole sequence you talked about with the selling of the lots and the building, right? There are no healthcare professionals in there, although the home is meant to serve somebody who will most likely have some sort of health or function related need in the time that they live in the home. But that just the whole model of having an interdisciplinary team up front and the investing in that at the design stage, it just hasn't quite proven out yet to be. But I do think it'd be effective. I don't know cost-wise, but just as a model, I love the model. I just haven't seen it at any scale.
And that's a part of that. My big, hairy, audacious goal would really be to franchise the concept of the Thriving in Place Dream Team. Because all of those people, and I don't know if that's an insurance model or a subscription model or what that might look like, but if you had access to the elder law attorney, the CPA, the architect, the physician, the in-home care agency, transportation, food delivery, if we could package that. But again, this requires that we quit working in silos and start reaching across the aisle and holding hands. There is enough business for all of us. But I do think that I would want your input in design if it was for a client of yours.
And for my story, I got interested first in aging in place and design. Well, when we built this house with my grandmother that lives with us, but then kind of kept with it after that. But when I started reaching out to architects and designers, I realized that I had come from a medical model where interdisciplinary work was the standard. Like you don't really treat somebody with a brain injury by yourself. You have a physical therapist, you have a vision person, you might have a psychologist. Like, it's like you can't possibly treat this person without the input of these different areas because it's a complex injury. And then when I was thinking, well, the home is a complex tool to help promote that. And that's when I started reaching out, and I felt it was a rude awakening. It was sometimes unpleasant because I did not appreciate the dynamics, some of the competitive dynamics that were at play and some of the business models that were at play that didn't really allow for an extra consultant to come in or a slice of whatever the fee sheet was. And so I remember just thinking, and honestly, for a while, I just thought, maybe this just is never going to work. I'm just not going to be able to be a part of this. I just find it utterly interesting and fun. And I think it's an innovative way to help people in their homes. But yeah, I mean, I literally started cold calling architects and trying to get and do lunch and learns. And there was one here in San Antonio that allowed me to come do a lunch and learn. And I'm not even sure I made a dent. They were like, what are you trying to do? This doesn't make any sense. But anyway, so I'm just glad to meet a like-minded person. So I don't feel so entirely insane that perhaps maybe with more effort or as the population continues to age, that model can update itself a little bit, that it's not working and that we're not building spaces that perform well against known problems, falls, other age-related things that happen that should change the way that the home is performing for that person.
Well, yeah. And so I believe that it's people like us, and it takes a village to move the needle and to actually put a dent in an industry. I believe that people like you and me are just crazy enough to actually make a difference, because we are willing to rock the boat and be contrarian and ask for a new approach. Because again, the spec builder builds a first and second time homebuyer home. They build the first one before the family, and they build the move up. Okay, so the advantage I've had since I opened ADM Architecture in Seattle is nobody under 40 comes to me for a home design unless they're VP at Google or something, right? And so I get to say, any chance you'll live here in 30 years? And just by the way I've phrased that question, they can't really answer no. Of course there's a chance. Great. Well, now we're talking about you being 70 in this home. So we're going to talk about aging in place. I just make it happen because I've been doing this so long. I know how to approach conversation. I got asked to drive to a town a mile and a half or hour and a half away from my home for Christmas. Somebody read my book in Anchorage, Alaska, and they said, "We're going to Christmas in Port Angeles. Can you come to dinner and tell my mom what I've been telling her for 15 years? Because you're the stranger, and that means you'll be the expert and she'll hear you." And you could go to my house, Rebecca. I could send you with a script to go talk to my parents and you'd be brilliant.
Well, it's funny this podcast is going to be a sort of an inside conversation because we've never spoken before. But when I was originally trying to put together some marketing materials, trying to get some interest from builders before I learned some other things, and I wrote on there, "Let me ask the mother-in-law how she with the height that she wants the toilet." Like, she's not going to talk to anybody about this, especially not if the mother-in-law is coming to live with her son and her daughter-in-law, like, and she's going to be intended to be using a mother-in-law suite or space like that. Then if you're going to spend the time and the money to develop it for her, then why can't we get some specifications that would actually work best for her? But I had a very, very important person to take me aside in this, what ended up, I thought, being almost a futile effort. And he explained to me, and I think this would matter to people listening to this who are consumers. And he said, "Rebecca, the reason that this won't work is because no builder wants an alternative opinion introduced to a customer they've already signed to build a home. The last thing they want is somebody with ideas." Like, and I was just like, at first it was kind of hard to hear. And I thought, thank God somebody explained this to me, and they said they want the most limited number of people interacting with that signed client at that moment, because they don't want, I mean, understandably, it might delay the decision-making, it might change the budget, it might just add variables that they have not accounted for. And so if they probably saved me tons of time, because that just matched what my experience was, that people are very interested conceptually that these were good ideas and we should be doing this. But model-wise, business model-wise, that having a sort of the unknown variable in there, which would be me offering ideas or being part of that design team, was not necessarily going to be tenable. So anyway, I'm just sharing that with you. That was
I would argue, and not to stereotype anything, but the builder typically is, "Don't interrupt my spreadsheet," right? The bottom line is black, not red. I know how to make money. I got this spreadsheet from my dad in 1997 and it still works, so leave me alone. The market has to dictate the change. And right. I would like to give you a story of how it can work. So right here where I live in Paulsbo, Washington, a town of 12,000, a county of 250-300. I had a builder come to me, and he had just moved here from Las Vegas, and he had built 13,000 doors in Nevada. And he brought me four sets of drawings, dropped them on the desk. "These are Southwest, make them Northwest. I'm going to do a 24-lot subdivision with three or four types of homes. Nice to meet you, sir." Handed him my card, but I also handed him the book I wrote behind me. He came back a week later and said, "Throw away my plans. We're doing aging in place." That is what I'm looking for, right? This will be a beautiful model of what could be, because we're designing houses with inside the same four walls. That we can move interior walls and change what was a work from home remote office into a mother-in-law with a private suite. We can change what is a very nice Costco size pantry and give up the extra car space in the garage, and it can be converted to an elevator. We already designed it for both top and bottom. The floor plan works. So I've filed a trademark for the term future flex for home specifications. And I filed the trademark for longevity plans for house plans That's the other thing we're doing at Forever Home, is creating aging-in-place stock house plans. I've not seen anybody do it right. The last time I saw someone do it, it was in a metal spiral binder in 1999. Probably a little early, right? You can go broke teaching what a hamburger is, but once we know what a hamburger is, or aging in place is now becoming a term we're all aware of with the boomers, well, then be the best hamburger and now you're in business.
But it reminds me, I'm going to credit Esther Greenhouse. I interviewed her earlier in the podcast. She's an environmental gerontologist, and she talked about having the home design as part of your portfolio, because you already mentioned the extraordinary costs it would take to get into these continuing care communities. And if you're thinking about cost avoidance, so I don't want to pay multiple six figures to go down that road, then why, like, isn't this part of comprehensive retirement planning at any age?
Absolutely.
To say, I get to stay in this home. Who knows what the interest rates are going to be like if I wanted to move or even rebuild? And I know, we built this house in 2016 and we had it quoted, what if we wanted to build this again? And I was like, we couldn't afford it and these current prices. And so the thing is that it's seeing the home itself as part of that retirement planning, the retirement portfolio, and ensuring that it can perform against as many of the common aging related issues as is possible at the stage, as you're mentioning, when it's in a blueprint, you can move walls that cost you nothing to do this versus these ginormous plumbing rerouting and all these crazy things you'd have to do to try to make some place livable that was meant to be a kid's bedroom. And that's not going to be a quality of life and not meet the needs of somebody. So that's really cool. I'm really glad you mentioned that.
Yeah, we joke when we present to the consumer at a home show or whatever, where we're on stage, I say it takes $1 to move a line in an AutoCAD drawing. It takes $1,000 to move a line, move a wall in the field if you put it in the wrong place. So begin with the end in mind is what I would tell any architecture client, but you can use that terminology in the global aging sense. Begin with the end in mind. 70% of my advice is just good universal design. We are not turning your house into a hospital. Good design actually disappears, and you didn't notice, you just noticed it worked.
Right.
The last 30% is where I have conversations about your medical history. Did everyone on your mom's side have Parkinson's? Did everyone on your dad's side go blind? Okay, that will help us inform how to finish a team and get good design solutions, right? I just designed a remodel for a couple. She's had MS since 93. She uses a walker now. She knows she'll lose the fight and end up in a chair eventually. So we're redesigning both her bathrooms. She's fine with the stair chair. So we're not trying to solve for an elevator in that scenario. Everybody's unique. No, and that's my thing, right? Spec builders trying to build for everybody, which means they didn't build for you.
The person that gets to experience that is you living in that home and all the shortcomings. And that kind of just becomes part of the challenges in life that you don't necessarily need. Now, I wanted to ask you, one of the other barriers I came across when I first started trying to reach out and talk to architects, it was actually an architect that pulled me aside, and because I had a lot of these pull me aside conversations, which is funny, because I didn't want to say anything in front of everybody else. And she said, I don't ask about this, because one of the slides I had presented would be like, how do you have this conversation sensitively? And she said, we don't ask about this. I don't ask about this because I don't want to be responsible for offending somebody and losing the business. I'm not a partner here at this firm yet. I'm a junior architect. And she even described this whole scenario of this older couple in their 70s struggling to get up the stairs to meet with her. And I said, did you talk to them at all about any accommodations or aging in place? And she said, no, I was just terrified that I would lose that business if I drove them away. And so I mean, I know that's an N of one, just that one sentiment, but I don't think that's a uncommon sentiment, that it's the discomfort itself on the part of the designer or the person selling the service to even address something that they feel like would be offensive, to say, hey, hopefully you'll be alive in 30 years, kind of like you're saying. But how do you deconstruct the stigma around talking about aging, even just the term aging in place? Yeah. Those types of things. How have you addressed that?
Yeah. And I'm sure you may even have talked to Esther about this. There's a lot of ageism discussion as to avoidance type language. We're seeing it right now in our presidential election discussions. And yeah, most people shy away. And I don't know, I'm a closet choir boy. I don't mind the stage and the mic. And so I feel like I have an obligation to be a part of this messaging because it needs to change. I don't shy away, but you heard me earlier talk about how I gently did not offer you a different way to answer the question.
Right.
Is there any chance that you would live here in 30 years? Great. Now, I've written a book. I can hand them the book. That is clout. That is a very thick business card, which gives me the authority. I didn't write the book to make money on the book. I wrote the book to have the clout to have the conversation as an ex. I can set that down in front of them, and the person they're sitting across from is the name of the author. They're going to listen.
Right.
And maybe that does set me apart. I'm sure it does. But I don't have to shy away. And I use jokes. I use comfortable language. You peel the onion. The truth is three levels deep. And so you do have to be empathetic. You have to be an active listener. You have to hear and smell between the lines and watch body language. Verbal is only, 7% of our body's languaging? Watching facial expressions. I read people better than most. And so I am able to peel that onion and get to real dreams, real pains, real truths. Because at the end of the day, back to that young architect who was scared to death to talk about somebody getting older or having their abilities change in their home. What's the alternative, right? I joke, right? Aging's the best kept secret unless you like the alternative. Hey, Grandpa used to wake up. I'd say, hey, Grandpa, how you doing at 96? He's like, well, I woke up on the right side of the grass. That's a start. Okay, right. So if you can make light of the fact that we are all going through this and it's the human condition, and therefore we may as well be discussing planning, because nobody makes good decisions in an emotional and financial backpedal. And that's the after the fall scenario.
Right.
And we get that call twice a month at our architecture firm because they know what we do, right? So they call, mom just fell and broke her hip. She's going in for surgery, 6 weeks of inpatient rehab. Then she's coming back home. What can you do? Lipstick on a pig. I can't do much because of the time it takes to do good design and permitting and construction.
Right. And I think, you know, we need to maybe look at it as a two-sided issue. So going back to the younger junior designer that's concerned, is part of it is their own affect, what they're bringing into the conversation, their comfort level with discussing it and giving them some tools and power to, like, for example, one of the questions I like to reframe is, instead of saying, are you going to be in a wheelchair? And I say, oh, you're so active with your pickleball and tennis, and do you ever anticipate needing a knee replacement? Most very active adults end up needing a knee replacement somewhere around 60 to 65 years old. Oh yes, I'm very active. I'm the world champion pickleball player. I know you want to continue playing that. So if you end up getting a knee replacement, there will be a period of time where you're going to have some more challenges with using the bathroom or showering. Oh, okay. And so they see themselves and can connect with a self that may have a physical challenge, but it doesn't have to be presented to them as something that sounds dark or scary at that time.
Right. It doesn't have to be. Yeah. It doesn't have to be a morbidity or a mortality type discussion. And it sounds like you're practiced at it as well. And that we teach that. We have coursework at Forever Home to train that trainer. And that's the kind of person we would want to teach them. How do you become comfortable so that you are getting this work? Because we need more people doing this work.
And you've mentioned it a couple of times that I do think an undervalued, no pun intended, aspect is talking about the financial differences. And part of the reasons I have this podcast and I've had this topic come up so much about the cost of the care that you described is I've had people come up to me or even email me after the podcast and say, I had no idea it costs that much until you said that on your podcast. And Alec, does that make you think differently? Yes, it does. Well, that's the whole purpose of this podcast, is just to give us things to think about. And I really think the general public does not quite get it.
Right? Even if I said, let's just throw out some numbers, okay? Let's say an elevator is $50,000. Everybody freak out, wouldn't they? Until I said, that's 5 months in assisted living. Right. It wasn't your goal to stay home. And if we're staying home years longer, because we have modified your home as one of the spokes of the wheel of independence and autonomy, 65 plus, pick a number.
Right.
Then you would invest in any of those spokes. So yes, housing is a part of retirement. And we coach financial planners. We coach CPAs and CFPs on that exact discussion. We're a part of that wheel of whole thought process around good retirement planning.
Well, and something that always struck me was that we look at sort of the energy efficiency of a home and really can assess its value or even future worth to a future consumer if it's very energy efficient. And eventually it will be, how ready is this home to accept aging related issues? And like some that you can go through and look at the energy efficiency, but someday there'll be a number that spits out and it says, this is how ready this home is to do anything it needs to do for you.
Yeah.
I haven't gotten that far, but that's.
Yeah, I love the idea that it would have. I mean, you see it on Zillow or you see it on Airbnb, yeah. It's the walkability score. Well, yeah. There's people working on wheelchair, the wheelability score. I was interviewed last fall by the two gentlemen that actually got the accessible button into the Washington State MLS for real estate agents.
Oh, wow. Very cool.
So there are a number of people, and Barry's a chair user. He got in a motorcycle accident in his 20s, and he and Tom are both real estate agents, and so they tackled that problem. Only 4% of our housing stock in the U.S. has a mobility-specific alteration to it. Well, we have a lot of work to do.
And I know there's kind of some reductionism that happens when you talk about aging in place, and people go specifically first and foremost to wheelchair accessibility, which I obviously is one thing that you'd have to plan for. But the vast majority of aging adults don't actually end up using wheelchairs. They end up using walkers and canes. And some of the bigger issues, even more, I would say even more, not like you can compare, are the sensory changes that come with aging. And that's hearing and vision. And so we get very, it's almost like, we can make the home okay for a wheelchair. And we kind of pat ourselves on the back and we're like, we did it. We have created a home that will serve somebody for 100 years. And the truth is, like, that's really maybe just the start, because now you're thinking, I mentioned the sensory issues, the balance issues. Now you're thinking about, where does a caregiver participate in their care in the specific space? Is that caregiver's back going to be okay to make that turn into that shower? Yep. Are they going to be able to lift that person? And you throw out a caregiver's back, and that was the only one in a tri-county area that was willing to take what you were going to pay to do it. I'm being extreme here. But yes. The truth is, like, it goes beyond sort of the wheelchair accessibility, because I what we get wrong about wheelchairs is we think about people usually in their younger years that had a car accident or diving accident, and they're kind of wheeling around the movies and they've got good upper body strength and they're young and they've got a lot of energy. But people that are using wheelchairs in their 80s and 90s are rarely self-propelling it. They're in a wheelchair because somebody lifted them out of bed and put them in the wheelchair, right, and has to do that over and over again. And so there's probably just an education gap over, like, what is a wheelchair user at 85 versus 45? And then also, if that wheelchair user is requiring an assistant, then you have to think design differently again, because it's not just the turning radius, the ADA turning radius, it's that person that is trying to assist them and then their safety as well, because you want them to stay healthy so they could help that person. So,
yeah, we just did a design for a couple in Seattle who he's been a quad for a while. And we've designed houses where there's a gurney system that can actually get him, with the roof trusses redesigned, can get him from the bed into a wet room shower. We've done all that. We've designed an apartment for a 4-year-old with Rett syndrome. they knew that this child would be dependent forever, but we wanted to give them an independent space, right? And so the gamut is so wide. But you're absolutely right. When we do a home assessment for aging in place, one of the first things I point out is throw rugs, drop zones, and then typically color and lighting.
Yep.
Because everybody liked beige on yellow on gold oak. And our eyes let in less light. They yellow over time. And that all becomes a blur. And so you're losing safety notifications at edges and transitions and corners between verticals and horizontals. I mean, that can be why the fall occurred. Doesn't have anything to do with a wheelchair. That's the start of the demise of a loved one because we didn't talk about all of it.
I did want to ask, because I don't want to be forgetful about, there's a lot of parts of our community that wouldn't necessarily be able to afford services like this. And even though I know you said it is still less expensive than assisted living, but when we're talking about the population that is basically Medicaid, nursing home level, or trying to stay in their home, and I know that this has been a passion of yours for a long time, have you come across like community organizations or upcoming legislation or things that would make those types of, or that population also have access to design or renovations that would help keep them at home?
Yeah. So that's where I typically switch to kind of the public servant and philanthropist side. I sit on our planning commission at our county level because I want to know what's changing, what's coming. I volunteer with our local area agency on aging. There are like Finney Ridge Nest program is a program of seniors helping seniors, and they collaborate for their resources. Maybe somebody's got a bookkeeper. Maybe somebody's got a handyman. Maybe somebody has the golden Rolodex on who's doing house food delivery. And that's the village approach internally. I spoke in Chicago at the American Society on Aging, and I was on stage with Patrick Rodine, who owns agingandplace.com. And the other person I was on stage with is Lewis Tenenbaum. Lewis actually is the author of House Bill 7676 right now, which is trying to get $30,000 as tax deductible for home modifications related to aging in place. I think that's the effort that happens at a global political scale that's trying to serve those that don't walk into an architecture office generally.
Well, and that's great. I'm glad that you mentioned that. And it makes me also, this is still a community issue, even if they go in on Medicaid funding, because that's still community funded, right? It's still state funded housing. And so it really is a problem that is going to be solved sort of in the areas that you're talking about. It has to be from those councils or oversight areas or people that are thinking creatively about policy that could help solve that. So,
yeah. Well, and even my own Rotary Club, we'll go do... Yeah. We'll build three wheelchair ramps in a mobile home park for somebody, right? And so you do have to start thinking about it at the community and the philanthropy level for those that are unable in certain income brackets.
Well, excellent. Well, I think this has been really, really insightful. I really appreciate you sharing this. If people wanted to find you and learn more about what you're doing, where would they be able to find you?
Yeah, so the website is foreverhome.com/US. You can find me on there. You can find me on LinkedIn, whether you're looking for stock plans or want to learn how I can talk to seniors, or there's a lot out there both for professionals and homeowners alike. If you're in the Seattle area, it's adm-architecture.com. But for what we're talking about, I think Forever Home's probably the route to go.
Well, Aaron, thank you so much. I am looking forward to having you back. I know we're going to take a little bit deeper dive into your sandwich status, as you told me about. So we will do that. But for today, thank you so much for visiting with us.
Oh, it was a blast. Thank you.
Hey, everyone. It's Rebecca. Thank you so much for joining me today. I'd like to take just a moment to review the disclaimer. This podcast is for informational and occasional entertainment purposes only. Nothing discussed here is formal medical, legal, or financial advice. By listening to the podcast, we are not creating a patient-doctor relationship between you and myself or any of the guests. Really, it's just me and a possible guest or two, sometimes three, sitting around talking about difficult topics related to aging parents. If you have or suspect that you might have a medical problem or condition, you should seek advice from a licensed medical professional. If you have any questions or concerns, please read the full disclaimer in the show notes or contact me directly. Thank you again for joining us today. I can't wait to see you next week. Have a good day.